Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The music world moves fast. Want to stay up to date on the latest albums and get in-depth examinations with the artists? Check out Consequence of Sound, the podcast. Bite-sized album reviews for the music fan on the go who wants to stay in the know, and much more. Subscribe to the series on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider, and let the writers of Consequence of Sound steer you right. Check it out at consequenceofsound.net/COS podcast. Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Take a second before we get started here to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening from. Whether you're checking us out on YouTube, on Spotify, you can follow along there as well, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts from, you can subscribe there too. That way you can keep up with all of the interviews that we put out every single week here. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Richard Ashcroft. Of course, you know him as the lead singer of The Verve. He's had that solo career that's going for nearly 20 years now, and we're going to be talking about his latest record called Natural Rebel. It's a record that he says is for the fans. We're going to get into exactly what that means. There's also a lot of talk about riffs on this record. The song Money Money, we'll get into a deep dive and how that song has a connection back to the lawsuits that happened after The Verve's big hit Bittersweet Symphony. It's an impassioned interview from a very impassioned artist. It's Kyle Meredith with Richard Ashcroft.
Hi, Kyle.
How you doing, sir? Thanks for doing this.
That's fine. It's no worries. Yeah. Good.
Congratulations.
I can make it there. I can make it anywhere, can I? America, it's the home of show business, isn't it?
I guess so. I don't know if I would count Kentucky as the place where you would go to make it, but I certainly appreciate it all the same.
I read Hunter S. Thompson reports on that area. Sounds quite an interesting place.
It's true. He's from this town, and as well as, I don't know, Muhammad Ali and a bunch of other folks. So we got our
exactly. He did a good report on the races down there. I remember reading that when I was a young lad. Hilarious on the Kent Derby. I think he did a report on that. That was interesting.
But
go for it. Fire away, and I'll answer as many as I can or not. I'll just move on. If something's boring, we'll just hit the boring button, yeah.
Sounds good. In all seriousness, no, congratulations on Natural Rebel. What a fun record this is. It's been a great listen, man. It really has.
Thank you very much.
You know, I'd start out because you said something right at the beginning, and I feel like a lot of people have glossed over this, because right from the beginning, you said this record, it's for the fans. And I feel like that sets a template in a certain way, like give the people what they want. Does that, you know, direct the mindset going in?
When I say it's for the fans, it's for the fans. bands in a sense of, number one, music, when you pass it on to the next listener, to a person, to anyone, to anyone's brain, their story, their internal emotions, you no longer know what that sounds like, what it represents to the listener. And when it comes to a fan of an artist, you know, what I wanted to separate here is, let's separate the deliberators. Let's separate the chin scratchers. Let's separate all the bullshitters who've never written a damn song in their lives from people who simply listen and appreciate music. This is for those people. This isn't a record for any motherfucking analytical brain who wants to sit down and tell me and give me a thesis on why they or she or he could do a better job than me, yeah? This is for the fucking fans. This is for people who listen and they come with a completely open and ready to be lifted, open heart, positive people. And I don't mean fans in an unhealthy way. I mean just appreciators. People. So when Rolls Royce or Enzo Ferrari had a new model, when Pininfarina did the bodywork and they unveiled it, ultimately, you know, it's for themselves, but it's for the admirers of their work. It's not about, you know, what Lamborghini thinks of it. It doesn't really matter to me what the critic from Auto Express thinks about it, because I'm Enzo Ferrari, right? There is a lot of thought and feeling and emotion and everything that goes into my music. And but ultimately, the only, if anyone beyond me is for, it's actually for the, it's for the fans that, when I toured the world for the first time, having a number of years off, they completely reignited my hunger for that connection again between a writer and his audience. And, you know, what it is because my fans, they don't get led there like lambs to the slaughter. They don't get that I am not the flavor of any month, right? Because I'll never be the flavor of the month. Because if you're in fashion, you're out of fashion. If you're in time, you're out of time. Everything works in a opposite mindset with me, yeah? So I'm never in fashion, which, thank God, I'm never in fashion. Do you know what I mean? But what it means is my fans never have the big corporate push, the huge, big advertising campaign. My fans have found me over the years through the power of the songs, through word of mouth. So they're great fans to have. This is a solid relationship. This isn't built on just flavor of the month bullshit, you know? So that's why I kind of dedicated to them, because ultimately, beyond me, what am I? I'm just a guy who writes songs, who listens to them himself. I'm a guy who plays concerts in empty rooms. You know what I'm saying? It's like I played a show in a very famous place in Glasgow called the Barrowlands, and basically that's probably the last time I'll play this place, but it's a very famous concert hall, and I signed a load of stars for the fans as they came in, because I wanted to make the point that we all talk about these places, these mythical concerts halls and these bands and artists who play these mythical shows, but without the audience, it's just a guy tossing off on a stage somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Without the night, without the audience, without someone working hard to afford a concert ticket to have his, to be part of that feeling, there was no great night. So often I think the fans, as it were, it's always been a word that's tossed around like some funny little, oh, the fans. But they are the future. They are all we've got as an artist. You're people who appreciate it, because I tell you what, in this day and age, you're gonna have millions of people who don't appreciate what you do.
That's certainly true.
You better appreciate the people who do.
Well, I was thinking, you know, like when you're writing like that, when you just kind of have that mantra, I mean, it seems like, to me anyway, it would take the pressure and the weight off of what you could do with an album. Like, I think some people, and maybe I'm probably looking towards, you know, what I've read critically on this, that this was not These People Part Two, and maybe it was important that it wouldn't be These People Part Two.
Yeah, I just don't even think, I mean, ultimately I'm working on my musical mind doesn't even put me in a genre. It's other people's minds that put me in a box. It's their insecurity. It's their lack of understanding of music, ultimately. I'm involved in music. Most people are involved in something completely differently, and that includes, of course, the critics, because ultimately it takes death, unfortunately, in this game for people like me to be appreciated. But I understand that. I'm a connoisseur. I'm a PhD of this whole culture. I'm part of it. I'm a writer. I enjoy it. I'm a listener. I understand this culture better than most people. You know, I understand hip-hop culture better than most people. It's just music to me. Hip-hop's rock and roll. Rock and roll's hip-hop. It's the same spirit. But, you know, things move on. So right at the moment, I'm working on an album that's a completely different sonic palate. But to me, I'm not even thinking about it that way. It's just the way it goes. You know what I mean? This record was done with some great people in a fantastic studio that, you know, the Stones recorded a couple of albums on in the 70s. It's a great old desk. All the gear works perfectly. And also, I believe that gimmickry in music has got to such an extent that when you listen to a song like In My Life or a classic Beatles song or just a great, well-performed song from back in the day, you realize that there was no gimmick. It was just the melody, the song, the lyric. That's what the song was about. And everything else was less is more. Now we've gone into instant gimmickry, and I thought something like Birds Fly and songs of that nature, That's How Strong, takes it back to one more time where you'd imagine Otis Redding singing That's How Strong, or Elvis, or, you know, a time where the vocal and the melody and the lyric and the emotion led the song, not the gimmick, not the auto-tune, or not this, that, and the other. You know, because once the auto-tune's turned off, a lot of these guys are going to have no personality. Right. They're going to have nothing left. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So that's why, you know, Lil Wayne's lucky that he established his voice prior to auto-tune. You know what I'm saying? But if you're one of those rappers who have just depended on that, the day auto-tune becomes like disco is the day that you've lost your character. So an album like this is much more... I first wrote Birds Fly a number of years ago, and I always felt like it was a Buddy Holly influenced song, you know? And I think it's about being real about yourself, what you're into. So ultimately, you know, I could go either way. One day I do feel like I want to make a record with no human other than myself on it, with all synthetic instruments. But right now, it's easy to be synthetic. It's much harder to be real. It's much harder just to open your voice and sing without anything on it. It's much harder just to sit with an instrument and express yourself without synthesizing it, fucking it up. Now, that was all interesting X amount of years ago, but now it's kind of become a thing where it's kind of boring, if you understand.
Right.
It's kind of boring, where, like, I was hungering for something a little more real, as in even the sound of the vocals, anything, you know, I was looking for. And that's not authenticity or roots, it's just lack of pretense, really. Just, right, here's the song, this is how it starts, here's this in great vocal, you know, something. I say a song like That's How Strong, you know, I've not heard a song like that for a long time, because people don't even really attempt to write shit like that anymore. You know what I mean?
I think that's what a little bit of the, you know, the shock when you first hear that record is, because you hear these great songs like That's How Strong, Surprised by the Joy. And, you know, there's a lot of folks writing thematically about, you know, more sociological or, you know, the bad stuff, what's going on in the world anyway. And this is sort of like in a lot of sense, like a love album. And I'm not trying to categorize it too much, but there are a lot of love songs on here in a time where a lot of people aren't writing that. And I think that's what the sticker shock is.
Single of a musician and artist, it seems, is jumping on the divisive nature of every, you know, a lot of political things that are going on. And I'm like, has no one read about Bob Marley? Has no one seen the shit he had to go through in Jamaica to try and bring, like, the country, or this was life and death. And, like, he understood the power of music and the gift that was given to him and where it came from. And he understood that you can't use that to separate people. You can only really use it to bring people together. Yeah. So to see music and music people, industry people, using the power of music in order to divide people is something that actually angers me greatly. You know, I can't describe how it upsets me, because I always thought that to truly be involved in music, that you couldn't really have many isms left, you know, because you'd already admired a wonderful female artist. You'd already realized that, wow, some of the greatest music of all time came from Black American culture, you know, and it just keeps going on and getting better and different and moving and improvising and growing. So to suddenly be in a world where everyone's got a quote about something, it's usually filled with fear. And ultimately, after that fearful comment of divisive comment from an actor or a singer or whoever, who actually know nothing about the whole structure of this game, they're just, unfortunately, pawns in it. We know that. Well, I do. But unfortunately for them, they're just pawns in it. They think they're on, always think they're on the right side, you see. But what they're forgetting is like, normal people, you know, when they go and see a show or when they get a record, you know, there is a lot of transcendence involved. You need music that echoes, of course, the basic human condition, but also transcendence is important. Many elements are important when you music is part of your, you know, entertainment, your escapism, your back, you know. And of course, I think about it in a much different person to I did before I made it, etc. But still, everyone is misunderstanding the power of it and also the power of it to transform not only the maker and the creator of it, but the listener and the community around them. And basically, the reason why they don't understand it is because it's been so diluted that they don't even realize it's there.
Yeah, there's a lyric I'll bring up real quick in Money Money, because you said your riffs do nothing at all. Is that sort of what you're hitting at right there?
Yeah, exactly. Riffs, you know, even in a sense of, you know, at the end of it, it's really almost, I wanted to make that outro like guitar, like Steve Wyman, the guy from Oakland, a good friend of mine who plays the lead at the end. You know, we know about guitar, and he's lived through the hip-hop situation. He played with Lauryn Hill when he was a young guy. He's played with many people, but he's also played environments where they don't really sonically understand the guitar anyway, but it's there as a token gesture, yeah? So when he meets someone like me, when we were recording the album United Nations of Sound, and suddenly I know more about guitar than anyone he's ever worked with and appreciate it, and want it sounding loud and want the wah-wah on it and want it to sound like Funkadelic and et cetera, et cetera. Suddenly you're meeting kindred spirits. But not only that, what I wanted to leave was with Money Money, okay, rock world, you carry on the way you're going and you are disappearing off the cliff, right? Rock and roll is killing itself because it doesn't even understand itself. It's now just a dilution, you know. Kurt Cobain was the end of it, the story, to a certain extent, you know. And when I was making things like Bittersweet Symphony, I was saying to myself and also, you know, anyone who heard it, look, rock and roll is a spirit. Now, if I want to sample something and create a hip-hop rock and roll anthem, it's still rock and roll. You know what I mean? And it's even more rock and roll because what it is, again, it's another white English kid influenced by hip-hop, sampling some fucking white English guys influenced by black blues guys. And it goes on and on and on. But sonically, what I'm saying at the end with Money Money is that you lot are just a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox. You don't even know how to reach Source Point. You've never been there. Base Camp is somewhere you never even went. You just went from A to F to whatever, to arena tour, to this, to corporate, to that. You don't even know what it feels like to be in a 45-minute jam with some musicians and reach some kind of spot where you're all trans. You don't even know that.
Yeah.
You don't even know what that feels like because you ain't even a musician. So before we toured these last few shows that I had to cancel because of my virus, at one point I'm like, sod this. I got this new riff. So I played this riff for 55 minutes with the musicians. And at one point I said, this is music. You need to be invited. Because anyone can pick, and that's the beauty of music. It's like a football. Anyone can kick a ball around. You know, and that's the beauty of it. Anyone can bang a drum. But not everyone's Keith Moon. Not everyone's like James Brown. Not everybody's a this. Not everybody's a that. They don't go into these places that take not only a tremendous amount of hours, but it's also a spiritual thing as well, where you have to let yourself go as a musician to go, to be there, to get to this hallowed place where it's not what the music business thinks it's about. And when you let freaks like me take charge for a bit, then we take over. We do a Bittersweet Symphony. But the thing for someone like a Dre or someone like that, they live in LA. The center of entertainment is over there. I live in England. So now and again, you know, us guys can compete on a world level, but it's very difficult for us to sustain a world level domination thing when we don't even fucking live in the country that's pumping it all out. You know what I mean? But I'm saying sonically, I just thought, you know what? I might just give it the last final guitar, hurrah, driving at 120 mile an hour track. You know, I ain't heard one of them for about 30 years. You know, that sounds actually like guitar, like fucking real balls out, but not poodle rock shit, not heavy metal shit, none of that shit. Like, we just missed that whole era out, and we just fucking landed at the back of that sweet spot where the fucking Stooges are jamming with Jimi Hendrix, fucking whatever. This beautiful big stew. You got the fucking Sly and the Family Stone backing singers in the background. You've got Jim Morrison losing his fucking mind in the vocal booth, talking to fucking Alan Klein, and Alan Klein, and fucking Mr. Junior now is taking over that company. And I'm saying, man, I'm coming for that money. You know, someone stole like 50, God knows how much, million dollars off me in 1997, and they still got it. And in normal basic terms, I don't care where you come from. That's serious matter. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm telling him as well.
Yeah.
I'm telling Alan Klein Jr.
What?
I'm telling him. I'm coming for my money, man. You know, when his dad was around, it's like people could intimidate people by being a gangster, right, in the music industry. But you know, basically, unfortunately, for anyone who takes over that business, we now live in a world where anyone can be a gangster. Anyone can be a gangster, you know. Anyone can be a virtual gangster. You can be a gangster in whatever way you want. You can phone two phone calls. You can find a gangster. Everyone's a gangster. So there's no gangster fucking attitude no more. There's no fear with this shit. With, like, you know, some big figure. You know, it makes me laugh when I hear about these big managers from the 70s and stuff. It's like, get out of here. You wouldn't last 5 minutes, these guys, now. Because it's a different world now. And obviously, anyone who would work for that company would know that obviously, once this, like, thing is starts resolving or doesn't. This is what this song's about. It's a direct message, not only to the people who claim to be in guitar bands or anything affiliated with rock or whatever, that you're fucking fantastically boring. You are pale imitations. You don't even deserve to be, like, given that mantle. This is my feeling I get from a lot of them. You know, that's why sometimes I can't even be asked starting with acoustic guitar sometimes. It's like, fucking hell, man. I'm just another guy starting a tune with acoustic guitar. I might come and shoot myself if you're not careful. You know what I'm saying? Because the other ones have done it so boringly that they've even making it tough for me to do it because they've done it so bad. I'm like, shit, I know I'm going to do it well. I know I'm better than everyone and I know all that crap. But shit, you've done such a bad job. I'm kind of semi-ashamed of being in a fucking, you know what I mean? That's how bad a job they've been doing. So they let the baton, they dropped the baton. They all became, like, you know, sort of bad sort of Euro dance rock bands and stuff, whatever the fuck, whichever way the wind blows, they blow, you know? So they're all fakes, and they've earned lots of money, all of them, and good luck to them, but they ain't me. They're not fucking the real deal. They're not fucking Liam, not Johnny Cash, not Stone Rose, not The Clash, not The Pistols. They're not, nothing. No ones. Just easy fodder, churning out what their people want them to say, never saying anything fucking particularly interesting, because that's just what you need to be now in the modern age. You need to be a blank canvas in order for every person, individual, then can project whatever they'd like onto your blank, dumb face.
Yeah, that's
where I'm at.
Yeah, I'll only tie something loosely together a minute ago, because you mentioned Klein, and I don't want to get into all that. I know it's been well said and everything, or a lot said. But when I listen,
I'm happy for you to use the medium to get the message out to his company. Yeah, man. Listen to the last. Put that song on Natural Rebel. Turn it on in the APCO office really loud and just check that little bit of energy out in the last 3 minutes, yeah? Just harness that for yourselves. Get in your nice car that my song probably bought. And on the way back to see your yoga guru, just check out the end of that album and think about that. Think about stealing $50 million off a guy, and that guy's still alive on an island somewhere over there, and that you're over there, yeah? And I got millions of fans and people all over the fucking world, man. And I'm like, wow, you're bold. You lot are bold motherfuckers. You don't even put the song on your website. You're so damn ashamed of it. Yeah, you know? So I'm happy to go there, brother. You can print anything you fucking like, because you know why? I'm a free fucking individual. And to me, they're just like, you know, a legacy from a guy who came from another era, who managed to somehow take away 50% of one of the greatest songs of all time from its author and get away with it for 20 years, you know? So I'm cool with it, man. I think anyone, unless you are mentally ill, would always remember the day when $50 million was stolen off them. It doesn't matter if it was 20 years later or 5 or 50. It's the concept of gangster. I had something of mine which was worth $50 million, $100 million. It'll go on forever. It's taken from me by a guy from New York. That's all I know. And there's a little proxy piece of paper. And you're telling me that's enough. So I'm cool, man. That's why I got a great picture of it. I got so much acting coming. It's going to be so funny. I would love to, basically, if I was them, I would sign for a real life sort of TV show at Abco Records over the next few years, because it's going to be so funny. Some of their internal meetings on how they, like, handle this shit. Because at the end of the day, they're just people going to work. Ultimately, most of the people they work with are dead anyway. You know what I mean? It's like the Rolling Stones don't even have the balls to fucking have it. It's like, does it take me on my own to fucking do it? Rolling Stones can't even fucking have Abco. You know what I'm saying? That's how fucking bizarre it's got. You got, like, a super fucking Big Mac truck, and they don't even want to turn left and run over the bug. They don't even want to go turn left. But I'm like, yeah, I'm happy now. I understood, basically. I was just looking at a certain situation. situation that happened a few weeks ago, and I'm like, okay, I get it. I understand what's necessary now. So it's interesting you brought that up, because ultimately it's all part of the same story. It's like I realized I filtered it down what had happened back in 97. I filtered it down to its raw essence. A gangster stole 50% of something that's worth at least $100 million already. So that, you know, at least. So, you know, I'm never going to forget that. Fortunately, I was just brought up. That's all I learned. You know, if it wasn't, if I wasn't watching religious epics, I was watching Scarface. So, yeah. You know, this is beautiful for me. This part of my life story is doing good because it's part of this epic story, which starts with the Staple Singers, which starts again with the story of music and the story of the manipulation and this, and the kind of outright, just, you know, like I say, the dilution of the spirit, the capturing of the spirit, the marketing of the spirit, the death of the spirit, the reawakening of the spirit, not only personally, but as a genre, as a community, that we are no longer going to be used as little pawns in some pathetic little political bullshit game, because we're actually, we hold the keys to something way more powerful. It's just that, you know, if you don't realize you got the keys, then you don't realize you got the keys. You know what I'm saying? But it ain't the young people, you know, it's the young people who are going to smash the door through as usual, you know. And that's why I always look at hip-hop. I always look at where it's going, what's happening in that culture. Has that got saturated to the point where they can't even find a way through, or what's happening? Do you know what I'm saying? So there's always innovation sonically going on. Don't get me wrong, and there's great people around the world. But unfortunately, the great ones don't get heard at the moment because they don't fit into the caricature. They don't fit the archetype. That's why Natural Rebel won't be doing any business in America. That's why no one's going to hear about it. That's why no one will hear these hugely catchy songs, because I don't fit the type, man, and I'm cool with that. Because if you fit the type too much in 2018, you better worry about yourself. You better look in the mirror. You're like, shit, I'm so 2018. Well, you must be a dumb motherfucker then.
I love what you're doing, Richard. I really do. And Natural Rebel, I mean, we're going to be playing it here. So I appreciate talking to you.
Thank you so much.
I love hearing
this
record, and I love keeping it.
And take care.
All right. You take care, too.
To everyone there. Take care, mate. Bye-bye.
Right, bye. My thanks to Richard Ashcroft. And again, the new record is called Natural Rebel. I'll also point out, just as a personal aside, this is the 10th anniversary of the final album from The Verve called Fourth. And I love that record. And if you haven't listened to that record in a while, I think it sort of got looked over a bit too much in the States here when it was released. Go back and check out that record as well. And if you haven't already, please do hit that subscribe button that's right in front of you. Whether you're checking us out on Spotify, on YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast from, follow along there as well. After that, you can head over to wfpk.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.